Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Let's start things off tonight with just a few words about Monday's show, when we talked about a book called Yes is the Answer and Other Prog Rock Tales. If there's one thing I've learned from the voicemails and comments on our website, it's that when we enter the controversial realm of progressive rock on Soundcheck, you get people who are passionate, emotional, opinionated, and sometimes confused. Very confused. Like Sheila from Detroit, who tuned in midway through and missed the intro to our conversation about Prague.
All the time that I was hearing Prague rock, I was envisioning the city of Prague. And, you know, the architecture with gargoyles, vampires, turn of the century clothing, and lots of historical drama. That's what I was envisioning, that as Prague rock.
Some truly brilliant inventions have happened by accident, like Post-it notes or the Slinky. Sheila, your confusion may have inadvertently created a new subgenre of goth music made for and by Czech vampires. And in the time it takes me to speak this sentence, three such bands have probably already formed in wherever the Brooklyn of the Czech Republic is, and they're arguing about what it really means to be Prague, spelled like the city. More of your comments about the other prog rock coming up later on Soundcheck. Plus, how self-driving cars might change the way we listen to music. But first, you probably know Jane Lynch as the merciless but musical coach Sue Sylvester on the hit TV show Glee. Or maybe you know her comedic turns in Christopher Guest films like Best in Show and A Mighty Wind. But her latest role is that of mean old Miss Hannigan in the Broadway revival of Annie, on now at the Palace Theater, and it's that role and more that brings the Emmy and Golden Globe-winning actress Jane Lynch to the studio today. Jane, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
So when you were approached about playing this role of Miss Hannigan in Annie, did you have any
reservations?
Second thoughts?
Oh, yes. My first thought, actually, you know, My first thought was, why can't I do this? I started to come up with the reasons why. And I'm a musical theater person. Not that I've been performing in musical theater so much. I love musical theater. I aspire to be in musical theater. But when this came up, I realized that all of the excuses that I was coming up with were pure, unadulterated fear. I was afraid of going forward with this. It was kind of a jump off a creative cliff. And after like 2 days, I said, of course I'm going to do it. I'm in.
I mean, part of it must have been just, you know, all the people who've come before you, you know,
right.
Carol Burnett and Kathy Bates and of course,
Dorothy Loudon
and Katie Finneran.
Right. And Katie, whose shoes I stepped into, which is no mean feat and not at all intimidating.
So how many, I mean, when you did make the decision to go in and you started in on the role, did you have to kind of shunt all that aside?
Yeah, and you know, I do that almost automatically. I have always been able to kind of, because I start from the inside out, and if I focus on the outside for any amount of time, like, oh, they've done it and she did it this way, yeah. I will be lost. So I kind of have a habit now ingrained within myself that when I start, I don't think about what I am up against or what people might think.
And playing Miss Hannigan, I mean, when you do get inside that character, what is it? Is it just the pitted soul that appeals to you?
Yes, and this is somebody who hates where she's at and thinks she deserves better things. And I love playing people who are kind of put in situations where they have no business. Like Miss Hannigan has absolutely no business being around children. And like Sue Sylvester, too. I'm kind of getting those roles lately. Mm-hmm. Her eye is always on, you know, Easy Street, where she thinks she should be.
Well, maybe I'll pick up on the Sue Sylvester and the Glee thing in a moment, but this is from the brand new Annie cast album. There's a bonus track of my guest Jane Lynch as Miss Hannigan singing the song Little Girls.
All right, get inside. That's all the fresh air you're getting for the month. Now get out of my sight.
Little girls,
everywhere I turn, I can see them. Little girls, little girls, night and day, I eat, sleep, and breathe them. I'm an ordinary woman with feelings. I like a man to nibble on my ear, but I'll admit, no man has bit. So how come I'm the mother of these? Little cheeks, little teeth, everything around me is little.
My guest, Jane Lynch, as Miss Hannigan in Annie on Broadway. She's playing the role of Miss Hannigan through July 14th, and Jane Lynch is with me on Soundcheck today. I mean, you mentioned Sue Sylvester, you know, the coach in Glee, who is also in a position that she really doesn't belong in. And on occasion, you are called upon to sing in that, as you've done in some of the Chris Guest movies
Indeed.
That you've been in. Is it different, though, when you're singing with a live band in front of a live audience? How different is
that? Oh, it's so different. You know, this is theater as opposed to doing film. You know, there are no second takes. And when you're doing a live performance, you have to choreograph your energy. You have to negotiate all of this stuff. And so the first time I did a run-through of Little Girls, I was panting by the end of it, doing all of the choreography. And if you see the show, it's minimal. It's basically stylized movement, if you will. But I was – I couldn't hold the last note. So it is. It's about learning to breathe and conserving and, letting it fly where you want to let it fly. And you've got a mic, which is nice. And when I was doing theater before, there were no mics, but it's kind of nice that you don't have to go full voice all the time.
You know what you sound like when you were just talking about it? You sound like an athlete, like a runner, talking about how to get through a
race.
It's
like Olympic training, John. Little girls, indeed, but, yes.
It's a kind of athletic endeavor, and
you need to parcel out your. I have friends who are like, oh, we'll come visit you before the show. I was like, you don't understand. This isn't like you would come visit me before I shoot a scene where we get to do it a billion times in different takes and we have to, we all hang out while the lighting gets changed. This is, you warm up and you focus and you set your sights on the next 2.5 hours of, that's all you're going to think about. And it's kind of a relief, too. I love doing that. No, you can't stop by and visit me before. There's so much going on at the theater that's all about the performance.
So are you, in your little dressing room, like the boxer before
the match? There's nothing little about my dressing room.
Building yourself up into a rage to get out there.
I have a big dressing room, by the way. It's almost bigger than my house in L.A. It's funny. When I first started doing the first three or four performances, and I'm kind of used to this because I've done a lot of theater, it's really an all-encompassing thing. I do a warm-up. I run my lines. I get nervous. I reserve time to be nervous. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in week two, week three or whatever, and I've settled into a muscle memory, so I don't have to do such conscious warming up, where my body kind of – but I still do have to, shake it out and do some scales,
So we recently had Tom Jones on the show, and I asked him what his
– It's not unusual, Tom Jones?
It's not unusual,
wow,
Tom Jones.
Wow, that takes me back.
Yep.
No offense, Tom Jones, but that's great you're still around.
And has a great new record.
Really?
And we got to talking about what he does to keep his voice in shape.
Yeah, I'd love
and
to hear
said,
that.
He said he sings along with his own recording of Delilah.
Oh,
and when he can hit those notes, he knows that the voice is ready to go. It's been limbered up, and now he can...
Delilah. Yes, I get that. I understand, because also he recorded that when he was young, when his voice was at its peak. And if he, as a, probably in his 60s, 70s, can, match that intensity and that those notes with the same strength, then I think that's a terrific thing to do. Go back 20, 30 years and match your voice there. I think that's excellent.
All right, so tonight before the show, little Delilah in the dressing
room. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Now, when your character of Sue Sylvester on Glee does sing, it's usually something memorably inappropriate. Again, I guess it's a similar question to taking on the role of Miss Hannigan. Is it that kind of oddity, that mm-hmm. kind of square peg in a round hole that appeals to you.
It is. And, you know, that's Ryan Murphy, too. He loves doing that, especially with Sue Sylvester. So that's why, you know, I did Vogue. It was a remake of the Madonna Vogue video. Mm-hmm. And the last person you would think of would be Jane Lynch and Sue Sylvester to do that. But he loved that idea, and he made it work. And it was so much fun, and I think it's a really great video.
Also a recent episode of Glee in which you do a Nicki Minaj
yes.
song.
Yes, another that did round peg in a square hole type of thing.
Wearing a Nicki Minaj wig.
Yes, an outfit, a little mini skirt too.
It might just be one thing too many yeah. in there.
We gilded the lily, yes.
This is Jane Lynch as Coach Sue Sylvester on Glee singing Super Bass by Nicki Minaj.
This one is for the boys with the booming system. Top down, AC with the cooling system. When he come up in the club, he be blazing up. He got stacks on deck like he's saving up. And he ill, he real, he might got it ill. He pop bottles and he got the right kind of bill. He cold, he dope, he might be broke. He always in the air, but he never fly coach. He a total freaking trip, sailor of the ship. When he make a drip, kiss him on the lip. That's the kind of dude I was looking for. And yes, you'll get slapped if you're looking hoe. I said, excuse me, you're a hell of a guy. I mean, my, you're like Pelican Fly. I mean, you're so shy and I'm loving your tie. You're like slicker than the guy with the thing on his eye. Oh, yes,
almost disturbing.
I really don't know what to say yeah. to that, Jane. Jane Lynch on Soundcheck with me. How long did it take you to learn that rap?
About a week of you know, real intense rapping. And, you know, the thing about that is, when I started out, it was terrible, just awful. It was so hard to get past. Yes, you're awful now, Jane. It's awful now. You have no business doing this. But in 2 or 3 days, you're going to be so much better and you're going to actually enjoy this. And indeed, I got much, much better. And I can do it right now. I mean, I love it. I love listening to that. Very proud of that.
So is that the warm-up routine before Annie?
Yeah, that's a great. It's like a patter song. It's yeah, like the Broadway equivalent would be a patter song.
Yep. So now season 4 recently wrapped up on Glee with your character Sue getting fired mm-hmm. for taking the fall for a school shooting in which no one was hurt. And so people are now putting 2 and 2 together and coming up with, she's leaving the show.
No, I'm not. This is my hiatus. I'm doing Annie during my hiatus from Glee. And, it's, you know, they haven't picked up my option yet, but I have no reason to believe that I'm not going back. Mm-hmm. I have every intention of going back. So there.
So the run of shows playing Miss Hannigan in Annie, that runs through July 14th. Mm-hmm. So there is no chance of that being extended.
Probably not. I have to go back to work.
All right. Now, so you have to go back to being Sue Sylvester. Mm-hmm. Who has an awful lot to say on the show about gays mm-hmm. and other politically incorrect things.
Oh, she opines all the time, yes.
Do you ever have reservations, you know, when it occurs to you, you know, there's people out there who actually kind of believe what Sue is saying?
Well, the thing is she does say these things, but they're never that there's something wrong with the person. She goes right up to the line. Right up to the line when she talks about her sassy gay intern, Tyler, who she doesn't think deserves health care for a myriad of reasons. You can kind of see her reasoning. She stops just short of being hateful. That's probably it. She stops just short of being hateful.
So sneaky gays is right. Borderline, but not over.
Stepping right up to it. And I think that's why people love it. And that's why people love Ryan Murphy, because he steps right up to the line and dips his toe over it and then back.
The creator of Glee. Mm-hmm. This is, again, Jane Lynch as Sue on the local news with her segment Sue's Corner.
I got a bee in my bonnet, Western Ohio. You know what I've had it up to here with? Sneaky gays. Gone are the days of Oscar Wilde, Liberace, homosexuals so flaming they could be seen from space. Why, nowadays, sneaky gays are everywhere. At the church, at the mall, picking up their meticulously dressed, fastidious children from daycare. Why, you could be sitting next to a sneaky gay right now and you'd never even know it. And that just don't sit right with one Sue Sylvester.
Jane Lynch, yes. As Sue Sylvester. You know, people have to give Glee credit for sort of tackling issues like this.
I do, sure, uh-huh.
I mean, when you came out well after high school, right?
Yeah. I mean, I sort of. You know, I had two comings out. I came out to myself.
Yeah.
And then I came out to my family probably 12 years later.
Mm-hmm. I mean, coming out as a gay kid in high school.
Oh, I didn't come out in high school. Yeah, that is tough. Well, today it's different, though. But you know what? I when I think of Lima, Ohio, though, I think of Dalton, Illinois back in 1978 or whenever I was in high school. It's a tough place to be gay in middle America. And, you know, we've got this cool little bastion of understanding and liberalism in McKinley High out there in the middle of the Midwest. So
that's what's happening in Glee. And it is not your only foray into socio-political commentary. There's this wonderfully funny video that you did with with Jordan Peele from Key and Peele on the separation of church and state. So he plays state.
Yes.
And you play church, and it's like you're like a peaches and herb kind of thing.
Peaches and herb is exactly what it is.
Was that the model?
Yes, it was. We wanted to do, and Barbara Streisand and Neil Diamond, their concerts, that kind of 70s thing where they did those, you know, too much, too little, too late, kind of that thing with the harmony, and it's about having to break up and, you know, the angst of that, but we'll still be friends and we love each other, but we just can't stay together anymore.
Right. So it's this kind of R&B slow jam. You don't bring me
flowers.
I
get flowers, yeah. Right.
How did this – first of all, folks can see the video on our website at soundcheck.org. Mm-hmm. How did this happen?
Well, Jill Soloway was a great friend of mine, and Faith Soloway, the two of them, who did the Real Life Brady Bunch with me way back when. The Americans United AU approached Faith, who she's a songwriter, to sing a little folk song. She writes great little folk songs, and she got the idea, look, why don't we make it bigger? And let's get Jane and Jordan to do it. And she asked, and I said, of course. And, you know, I love the idea. You know, I think church and state should never meet. And so I lined up with it politically. And then it just looked like a great, fun thing to do. And it was. It was a terrific afternoon. We got doves and the whole deal. It was great.
And you got to dress up as a disco diva.
I did. And those long microphones. It kind of reminded me of Tom Jones's microphone. Bring you back to Tom Jones. He had a particular microphone.
All things come back to Tom
Jones.
They
do, don't they? Yeah.
Jane Lynch is my guest. This is her with Jordan Peele. A little bit of this Funny or Die video called Church and State.
Talk to you if I can find my way.
I am all knowing, so I'm knowing what you'll say.
You always take control, hate when you play that role.
I gotta be strong, cause baby, we don't belong together.
I wish I knew what makes me do the things I do.
Divine, my love, when you're just doing you.
See, there is good in me, but bad is all you see.
Could have been wrong, but baby, we don't belong together.
We're church and state, and we need to separate. Cause we're all up on each other when we're hurting.
Jane Lynch and Jordan Peele from Key and Peele. Church and State, it's a Funny or Die video. You can see the whole thing on soundcheck.org. It is definitely worth checking out. And Jane, I will admit that when you first walked into the studio, my first question to you was, is that your real voice on that video? I mean, it sounds so of that period.
Oh, thank you. Well, I was trying for it, so I was really flattered. We really wanted, and I thought Jordan did a great job, we wanted to nail that particular style.
Yeah.
And I think the camera work, you have to see the video, the camera work is really hilariously appropriate.
And little things like you mentioned the doves, and when, when he holds up the dove and it flaps its wings, you actually hear the flapping of the wings, like there's a mic left on stage or something.
And then those doves landed on my head, and there's a couple of shots. They stayed on my, I did an entire take of the song with the dove on my head. We used a little bit of it, but those were great doves. Boy, when they want to sit on your head, they sit on your head.
Now, you know, you've done so many comedic roles. Was that your intent when you first got into acting, theater,
music? Who has
music?
Intentions that actually work out? Our subconscious has deeper intentions for us, I think, than we do consciously. And so, of course, I didn't set out to do anything. I just wanted to work. And there was a part of me that thought I should work toward being like a repertory actor, where I could do a variety of roles. I never saw myself as the star. And as I started to work a little, I saw that, you know, oh, I'm good at the comedy, so I'll be the comic sidekick. And, you know, my goals for myself were nowhere near as grand as they've ended up being.
Hmm. So here you are on Broadway as Miss Hannigan in Annie until July 14th. But the repertory thing, you sort of... That's sort of a good description of the Christopher Guest movies.
Right, and that, I know, and I loved that. Though, for those three movies, we all played different, completely different characters.
Now, you did Best of Show,
right.
Mighty Wind.
And For Your Consideration. Okay. And then Waiting for Guffman was before I joined them, which was an amazing movie.
That's a funny movie,
hilarious
too.
Movie, and when I saw that movie, I saw it at the Angelica here in New York. I remember like falling out of my seat going, I want to do this! This is what I want to do!
So he did put together a little repertory company that
he
you
did.
Were a part of.
Yeah, gratefully.
And in the mockumentary A Mighty Wind, this is Jane Lynch singing as Laurie Boner.
Yes, indeed. It is pronounced Boner.
Yes. And she is a member of the folk group The New Main Street Singers, as well as being a former adult film star.
Now this song is about a young girl with an unfortunate moniker, Potato. Now, I don't know, fellas, you remember how she got that name? You remember? Well, maybe the ladies could give us a refresher. Here we go.
Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, gotta get her out of there. Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, mama says it just ain't fair. One night, mama went to fetch herself a sweet potato, fell down the cellar stairs. Dork dropped in while she was on the floor, so my sister was born down there. Daddy said, this will be nothing but a misery, never will be worth a day.
You know what's great about that?
What?
Other than it's great, is that we performed those quote unquote live, even though we were filmed. That is not a pre-recorded. We did that on stage with the
with
audience.
That audience.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And while we were listening to that here in the Soundcheck studio, you, Jane Lynch, were singing along with every word. Now, this is years ago.
Oh, you don't forget Potatoes in the Paddy Wagon. Okay. Got to get her out of there. You don't forget that. That was written by Michael McKeenan and Ed O'Toole, by the way, who are amazing songwriters.
They are. And that's from the film A Mighty Wind, which Jane Lynch is part of the cast that Christopher Guest put together for a series of films that are just one funnier than the other. That one going back 10 years. You're on Broadway till July 14th, the hiatus from Glee. Is there more Broadway in your future, do you think?
I hope so. I you know, I know there is. I mean, if they'll have me, I want to do it. I love it. I got the bug. I got it. I got bad.
One final question, Jane. There's an awful lot of top 40 on Glee. And, you know, you've been referring in some of the other things you've done to top 40 from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, the thing with Jordan Peele, for example. What did you grow up with? I mean, what is your what's your music?
Musicals. My family loves musicals. We listen to a lot of musicals. I am a product of FM AM radio growing up in the 70s, WLS in Chicago. WFLD TV had great music. You know, I like pop stuff. And I like the old stuff. My parents loved to sit around the kitchen table and harmonize together. You know, we were a musical family, but none of us were great.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm probably the best of my family, and I'm not that good enough.
So when you were talking before about like Neil Diamond and Barbara Streisand,
that was
your thing.
Oh yeah,
up.
I would listen. I mean, I liked music if it was good. Like it. John Michael Higgins, who played my husband in A Mighty Wind, gave us all a compilation of his favorite music, and it was all over the board in terms of style. I said, "Well, what makes these? Why did you put these all together?" He said, "Because they're good. They're all good. Different styles. Some almost sounded like elevator music, and some of it was like hard rock, but it's all good. I like good music."
Anything now? Anything current?
What am I listening to now? I'm listening to the Annie soundtrack in my head all day long. But there's this woman named Anita Kerr, and the first time, she's from the 70s, she had a group of singers, the Anita Kerr Singers. And on first listen, you might think, elevator music. You know, like, would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? But the harmonies will make you cry. It's the most beautiful stuff, and I love her, and I listen to her all the time.
All right, well, Soundcheck listeners, get your hankies ready. We'll give it a try. A little bit of Anita Kerr to wrap up. Jane is performing in Annie as Miss Hannigan through July 14th, and then more of Glee coming up later in the year. Jane Lynch, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Soundcheck.
So far apart, and one of us has a broken heart.
Up next, we'll get the scoop about Google's new all-access music streaming service, and we'll do a bit of speculating about how self-driving cars could impact the music biz. But before we do that, we'll hear what some of you had to say about what the definition of prog rock is to you. That's next on Soundcheck. Earlier this week on Soundcheck, we talked with the authors of a new book called Yes is the Answer and Other Prog Rock Tales. It's a book all about the much-maligned subgenre known as prog or progressive rock, often associated with bands like Yes and Genesis and King Crimson. If you missed it, you can listen to it on our site, soundcheck.org. And during the conversation, we asked you, our listeners, to tell us how you define prog rock. We heard back from a lot of you, like our caller Reggie.
Prog rock is a pop song written in 7/5, like Money. And the lead guitar player, David Gilmour, deciding he didn't want to do the guitar solo in 7/5 and switching it to 4/4, and then coming back to 7/5 to end the song. That's prog rock. Money!
Thanks for the call, Reggie. Here's one that we got from another caller here in New York.
I was in my 20s, and I was at college at a time when sex was okay to engage in. Finally, this music was freeing, forward, and creative. It's about movement.
We also heard from a lot of you on soundcheck.org. Rob from Brooklyn left us a comment that goes like this. I was a 16-year-old black teenager when progressive rock was making its advent. My older brother turned me on to Yes, Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Blood, Sweat & Tears, and Chicago, all groups with the weird time signatures and lyrics that you had to do a little more thinking to get.
What a lucky man he was.
Then the Loch Ness Monster called commercial radio reared its ugly head, and all these mediocre groups started getting airplay. It came to be about being conformist and trying to get a spot on the radio by sounding like everybody else. Well, thanks to everybody who called and commented at soundcheck.org. How do you define prog rock? Leave us a voicemail, 866-939-1612. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Let's face it, we're all getting our music digitally these days, so what could be worse than falling behind on the latest apps and gadgets and innovations? That's why we turn, from time to time, to Elliot Van Buskirk. He's the founder of Evolver.fm, and he fills us in on the latest digital music news. He's on the line with us now. Hi, Elliot.
How's it going, John?
Good. Lots of headlines. Why don't you sketch out a few of them for us? First, Google Music. What is this?
Well, this is a lot of things. I think people are confused. I mean, it starts with the name, Google Play Music All Access. I mean, contrast that with something like Spotify or Ardio. So it's a locker, but the main thing that they announced recently is that it's a music subscription. So as with Spotify and Ardio and Rhapsody, you can now pay Google $10 a month for access to somewhere in the neighborhood of up to 20 million songs.
And now when you say it's a locker, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's hard to collect music these days. So Google is trying to let you upload your music library into the cloud, mm-hmm. in this case, the Google Cloud. And what makes this interesting is that now you can put your own MP3s that you've carefully or not so carefully collected into this Google Music Locker. And then alongside that, you can have music from this all-access subscription. So if you decide to throw down your credit card, I believe they have an introductory offer for $8 a month, which makes it cheaper than anything else until June 30th. And you can have those 20 million songs alongside your up to 20,000 songs that you've uploaded. And that makes it kind of a unique thing.
So this is coming at a time when we're hearing about Apple also launching an app, a music app. So do we have an arms race brewing here?
Well, in the sense that everybody wants you to use their product to listen to music, yes. But they are apples and oranges. You see a lot of people sort of conflate all of this stuff into the same category, from internet radio to these on-demand services. And it sounds like what Apple's doing is internet radio. So something like, I guess, Pandora is one that people are familiar with. And then Google is doing this on-demand thing where it's more like a record store, mm-hmm. whereas what Apple's doing is more like, you know, a radio station. So, yes, these are two big players. They compete in all kinds of ways, but it looks like they're taking a little bit of a different approach here.
Isn't Apple a little late to the party?
You know, they're always late. I taught a class at NYU in the fall about Apple and the music industry. And going through their history again, it was amazing. Just time and time again, you know, they are almost never first. What they are is a little closer to perfect than the earlier versions of something. So it remains to be seen what that is for online music. But in the past, it hasn't really hurt them to be late because they sort of see what everybody else did and try to improve on it. And, you know, without Steve Jobs, things might be a little different, but maybe they won't be. Somebody like that, he left a big impression on that company. And so it'll be exciting to see if they can do the Apple perfect version of internet radio.
We're speaking with Elliot Van Buskirk. He's the founder and editor of Evolver.fm about some recent digital news. Now, Elliot, in talking about Google Play Music All Access, what a mouthful that is, you said it's hard to collect music these days. What are the kind of the problems that face us when we try to collect and store and organize our digital music collections?
Well, I think you hit it right on the head there with those three things. I've sort of split what we're doing these days into three sections. There's discovery, and the internet's doing an amazing job with that. I mean, better than anything that we music fans have ever had. I mean, there's more music coming at us from more places. And then the next phase is auditioning. So you're like, well, I kind of like the sound of that. I'm not sure whether, you know, in the old version, it would be like, I'm not sure whether I'm going to go buy the album. And now it's, well, I don't know if I'm going to add it to my RDO account or my Google or my Spotify or whatever. And then that leads me to the problem that I'm spotting, which is with the third section, collecting. So now you've decided, you know, I love this song. I want it to be in my life forever. Well, you should be able to do that. And I think we have such a wealth of music discovery options that none of them can funnel into the same place. And I worked with the music blog Drowned in Sound, or I guess they call themselves a reviews site, not a blog. But Drowned in Sound readers, they were polled to see how they collect music, and the most popular option was a text file So literally writing the names of bands or songs or albums in a text file, or even on a piece of paper. One guy kept a notebook in his pocket to write these things on.
That's the way they knew what they had? That's the way they organized their collection?
That's how they moved from discovery to collecting. So then they're going to collect in whatever way they want, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, vinyl, BitTorrent, you know, pirating the thing.
Right.
But it's just that the process is broken somewhere in the middle there if somebody has to keep a piece of paper next to their computer to like figure out what to check out.
I love that when, you know, this far into the digital music age, we're reverting to, you know, quill on parchment to figure out what we've got and where it is.
Yeah, and if this is really hardcore fans talking about it on the internet, it's even more amazing using paper.
So we have all these competing services that offer us ways to get music legally, we hope, illegally if you must, ways to, you know, have them on your various devices or up in the cloud, and it seems like the main problem is you don't have one place where all these different formats and all these different lockers and clouds can all talk to each other. Is that right?
That is right. And part of the issue is that they all speak a different data language. Mm-hmm. So if someone were to build an app that let you use anything you wanted in any direction, that would be pretty tough. And nobody knows if anybody would really use it. The approach I've been seeing a lot is that there are these bookmarking services. Later.fm is one that we liked. And it's just what it sounds like. You know, you say, I want to check this out later. And it works with anything that's on the web, which isn't the same as the internet, which right. The internet includes apps and things like that. So I don't think we're there yet. I hope someone will figure it out and even go to the point where you can turn on the microphone on your smartphone, identify the song that's playing, and then click, do I want to add this to my collection, and just be done with it, you know? Mm-hmm. I'd love that.
Elliot Van Buskirk's with us, the founder and editor of Evolver.fm, a little digital music news you can use. And Elliot, before I let you go, one more thing I wanted to ask you about. Self-driving cars. You had an interesting piece on your site recently about self-driving cars and how they will affect the music business. Can you explain that briefly?
Music has become something that accompanies other things. Whether we are cooking dinner or jogging, if you look at the site Songza, they've built an entire business that's doing pretty well just on picking music for activities. And the car is really the last place that most of us focus on music, and it's because it's a safety hazard to use our eyes to check Facebook and update our Instagrams and do all this other stuff that everybody seems to be doing on an almost constant basis. So if your car is driving itself, are you going to be on your laptop working on a big proposal for work, or are you going to be focusing intently on what you're listening to? Judging from other areas of our lives and the sort of creep of devices, as much as I love them, we do need to sort of keep them at bay. And once those devices and activities start to come into the car, if the Department of Transportation is okay with self-driving cars, which we don't know yet, but if they are, you know, we could lose this last sort of the last bastion of pure music listening.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could also say that if you no longer need to be concentrating so closely on and intently on what's happening in front of you on the road, you could actually maybe listen and follow along with lyric sheets and liner notes and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I could see it going both ways, but are states allowing these cars to be tested?
They are. We're at a test phase, and they seem to be talking favorably about stuff like automatic deceleration for accidents and staying in your lane. We don't know if it's going to go all the way to self-driving, but I like your take. You know, we use our computers and smartphones for music a lot also, and so maybe it's a good thing if we can follow the lyrics.
All right, well, we'll have to see how that turns out, but in the meantime, Elliot Van Buskirk, creator of Evolver.fm, giving us a few recent stories from the digital music world. And Elliot, always nice to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Great to talk to you, John.
This is Soundcheck. Up next, the art rock duo Japanther plays live. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This song by the band Japanther reminds me of the Ramones, not just because of the punk sound, but because, like the Ramones, Japanther seems to love the sound of a great pop hook. But Japanther isn't just a band. It's a performance art project that's included a stint at the Whitney Biennial, a show with giant puppets, and at least one illegal gig atop the Williamsburg Bridge. Their new album is called Eat Like Lisa, Act Like Bart. And from it, they're going to play a song called Stolen Flowers. This is Japanther, live on Soundcheck. Japanther, a blast of headlong musical momentum from the band live in the Soundcheck studio. The song is called Stolen Flowers. Ian Vanek,
hi.
Drums and vocals.
That's right.
And Matt Riley, bass, guitar, and vocals.
Hi.
Man, it is still loud in here. Can you do something with that, please?
Lots of broken old equipment.
Credit where credit is due to our friend Felice Faison, who helped us to write some of the words for that song. So.
Stolen Flowers. The album is called Eat Like Lisa, Act Like Bart.
Yeah, that's right.
So you guys are channeling your inner Simpsons here.
Yeah, I love Matt Groening, and that creativity that he has put out for the last 20-plus years is... obviously look up to him, but it's a playful thing where we were talking about food politics and talking about graffiti and skateboarding all in one title. So just having some fun with words.
Eat Like Lisa, Act Like Bart, the album from Japanther, is out now. Despite the volume of sound, Japanther is, Matt, just a duo. How do you guys create, you know, the sound of the band without a conventional lead instrument? You have no guitar player, you have no keyboard player, there's no saxes or anything, it's bass and drums.
I think just by channeling that much more of our own energy and putting that much more energy into it, we hope that it's enough.
You also use some very, very lo-fi backing tracks.
Ian makes beats.
Played back on a cassette.
That's right. I think there's magic in a cassette tape. It's there's dust painted on, you know, magnets, and magnets are very magic and very beautiful. And as artists, I think we're all seeking magic. Our success rate is super different. So what we're seeking is that magic, and cassette tapes are a great tool for us to find magic. We're really lucky. We're a bass and drum duo, essentially the rhythm section, but we've made a lot of people shake and move and dance. So something is successful.
All right. Now, yeah, you brought up, Ian, the idea of art. I mean, Japanther describes itself on your website as an art project.
Sure.
You guys were at the Pratt Institute when
That's
you started
right.
this.
Yeah.
At what point did the art project become a music project, or was that from day one?
From day one, certainly. People like the Black Dice, same Animal Collective is another very akin to Black Dice, same scene. And the Black Dice called themselves an art project, or had a very loose way of talking about what they were doing, and I always thought that was super beautiful. So when we started it, said, well, we're printmakers. We love to silkscreen and do woodcuts. So that can be a part of Japanther. Sure, bring it in. Oh, we like to make video. Matt is an animator. Let's make an animation. Bring it in. Let's do it. As soon as
we're skateboarding and doing movement performances with movement, getting our friends to dance with us and getting people to move with us.
So you've done some pretty unusual performances. I mentioned, you know, the gig atop the Williamsburg Bridge, which maybe we don't want to talk about too much if that was an illegal thing to do. What was the strangest Japanther gig that you guys have done?
Oh, man, the strangest ones that we've done. That's hard to say. We performed with Lauren McFall, who is a bronze medalist in Olympic synchronized swimming, and that was certainly a very strange situation.
That was quite strange where people were diving into the pool.
With just one synchronized swimmer?
There was a team of synchronized swimmers called Aqua Doom, and they were amazing, but also Lauren McFall did a solo, and she's a bronze medalist Olympian. Yeah. So that was really a fun thing. We've done a lot of things with different artists. Interventions, like you said, illegal shows are exciting to us because music is a free thing. Rock and roll is a rebellion. And if you keep going into clear channel venues, you'll end up getting pigeonholed into not being anywhere near a rebellion. You're a joke. So what we're excited about is freeing music. So we thought if we ride a bicycle with a bunch of car batteries up to the top of the Williamsburg Bridge, we can have a great concert. Lots of people showed up. Lots of police showed up. But it was really, really fun. And we did it a few times with Ninja Sonic, with Spank Rock and Japanther, just friends of ours in the hip-hop community, skateboarding community, punk community, everyone getting together to kind of free their expression. And it's a very, you know, very difficult thing. James Brown said, express yourself.
Right.
And that's one of the most difficult things for humans to do.
So there is this kind of, songs as perhaps thinly veiled social commentary.
Sure.
Maybe less thinly veiled in this next song you're going to do for us, the title of which is More Teachers, Less Cops.
Yeah, each one teach one. Afrika Bambaataa said that, and that's everyone's a teacher. You're a great teacher. I listened to your radio show and have learned lots of stuff.
So your idea in this song is if we're going to put resources someplace, put it into teaching as opposed to policing.
We have a huge problem with education in this country, and we really need to educate our children better, and that's the beginning of a massive conversation. I'd rather play the song.
Ian, Matt has turned Matt has turned his stack of amps back on, so you now have no choice. It is time to play the song. The song is More Teachers, Less Cops, and that will lead us directly into another tune called The Drums Deliver. You will find both of them on the new Japanther record called Eat Like Lisa, Act Like Bart, but here are two more live performances from Japanther in the Soundcheck studio.
I'm not afraid of it. It doesn't bother me. It's just one of those things.
When I'm at the crossroads right now, which I don't really know which way to go.
I'm gonna go out my eyes.
deliver.
Once again, the members of Japanther, Ian Vanek on drums, Matt Riley on bass, and the two of them singing. It's all very DIY here in the Soundcheck studio. That's part of the aesthetic, it seems.
We say DIY, do yourself in. We work with lots of people. We don't do it ourselves all. Yeah. So,
Ian, your drums, beautifully right. painted by
Swoon,
a friend.
Yeah, by Swoon, a wonderful artist here in New York City. So,
and the microphones you guys use are they're kind of jerry-rigged things.
They were done by our friend Jason Rutherford.
They're actually nicely done now, but we used to go to Radio Shack.
Yeah, I used to do it myself, and then you could have said that.
All right, okay.
Now they're...
But you can see what the guys are doing. We've been shooting some video here in the studio. Check it out on our website at soundcheck.org. And, of course, the full experience, you need to see Japanther live, which you can do here in New York. You'll be at the Brooklyn Club Shea Stadium June 21st. And then a couple of dates in Detroit, July 3rd at Old Miami, and July 4th at the Grashot Gallery in Detroit. You guys are releasing a book.
We have a couple books we've done, but the latest book is The Cake of the Three Towers, which is another performance piece that we did with our friends from Gelatin from Austria to make this really gorgeous piece of performance art. And we feel a book and a DVD is the best way for people who weren't at the performance to understand that. We love trying new things, like becoming an animator. Oh, yeah, let's make cartoons.
I never played music before, so that was exciting. Oh, let's play some music. I've never, done animation before. Let's find something that's going to get us excited.
Have you ever run a restaurant before?
only in the past.
We have done two pop-up restaurants, but...
Now, that sounds like a scary thing, a pop-up restaurant.
Yeah.
But so now you guys are doing something a little more... long-term, perhaps?
Potentially, yeah. Out there in Bushwick, Brooklyn, we're hoping to get into selling some people some nice food and some nice drinks. I think that's a logical way for artists and performers who have established a large network to continue to nurture that network. I think it's a beautiful way to talk with old friends by breaking bread. So we would, of course, invite John Schaefer out to a meal, and we would have a nice conversation with him, and he would be able to relax a little bit more and have conversations with younger artists.
And then he would get sloppy drunk and get thrown out.
We might have to throw him out eventually, but, we wouldn't give him the bum's rush. We would do it in the nicest
way. We did a project this February at a restaurant out in L.A., so that was a real exciting experience for us to work with food and see how it brought people together, and we've always concentrated on food as a communal activity.
And will the Japanther name be applied to whatever this restaurant
No, I don't think so. That's why we're a little hesitant to talk about it. It's the...
This is hesitant?
This is hesitant.
This is hesitant to talk about it?
Oh, yeah, very. When we get excited about a project, you can't stop us from babbling.
You've already invited me, thrown me out. I mean, how much more voluble can you be about this?
Quite a bit more voluble.
Our real asset was that we have this network that we've built up. We see opportunities to involve people, and hopefully we can react.
It'll add a new layer of meaning to the album title, Eat Like Lisa, Act Like Bart. It is the latest record from the duo Japanther, Brooklyn-based here in our Manhattan studio. They're at Brooklyn's Shea Stadium, The Club, on June 21st. Two dates in Detroit, at Old Miami on the 3rd of July, and the Grashot Gallery on the 4th of July. Guys, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Thanks for having us.
That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow night at 9, the award-winning Irish novelist Colm McCann, whose new book is called Transatlantic, joins us to discuss some of his favorite music in a pick three. And Eleanor Friedberger, singer and songwriter and half of the band Fiery Furnaces, returns with a new solo album called Personal Record. She'll play live with her band. That's tomorrow on the show. See you back here then at 9 o'clock. Don't forget, June 12th, we're in the Green Space with Tig Notaro, Jeff Richmond, and guitarist Robert Randolph. Details on our website, soundcheck.org. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.